Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all ages, welcome to a rapid fire episode of Talk Hockey Radio, focusing on the recent Olympic qualifiers. I am joined today by Fraser. Hello, Fraser.
Hi, Simon. How's it going?
Not bad. You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Hooray. Unfortunately, Taff is back in the basement. He's not joining us today. So it's just the two of us. Apologies. You will miss Taff's dulcet Bolton tones, I'm sure. So we've had the Olympic qualifiers in Valencia, Ranchi and Muscat. We have our qualifiers. We also know who didn't qualify. We're going to go through what the surprises were, players who stood out, some of the more contentious issues, and then do some optimistic, hopefully, predictions on what's going to happen come Paris. So, teams who've qualified now for the Olympics, we'll go through the women first, shall we?
Yeah.
So we have the Netherlands, which is obviously an enormous shock to everyone that they managed to sneak in. The Belgians, the Germans, the Japanese, China, France, and that's in Pool A. And then Pool B is Australia, Argentina, Great Britain, Spain, the USA, and South Africa. So people who came into that from the qualifiers were Belgium, Germany, Japan, and then Great Britain, Spain, and the USA. Any surprises for you? Any reflections on those teams from the last week and a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think the shock for myself was United States making it. We talked about it in the last episode. They're a good defensive team, but I just didn't think they had the threat going forwards to get them over the line. And they really pulled it out when they needed to. You can't fault the amount of effort that they put into the games to hold their own against some strong opposition. I think the shock is that India didn't make it after their recent rise up through the women's ranks and how well they've performed recently.
I definitely agree. It was a bit, obviously, you and I kind of chat all over Taff for suggesting that USA would qualify. And that's the real reason he's not here, is because we refused to give him a link for recording. So he couldn't tell us, he told us so. Like you said, I think we picked up their defensive stuff, particularly their goalkeeper was really good. And they are an extremely fit team. The varsity programs are exceptionally professional in terms of the athletic side. But yeah, I think it probably was a bit of a shock for everyone how well they did at this tournament. India, I mean, I've seen criticism, which I think is probably fair, that they've been given every advantage possible pretty much by the FIH and they haven't qualified. The men obviously have also had some pretty favourable treatment. I've seen comments like the fact they've got the best coach, the best goalkeeper, the best player from India, and they didn't qualify. I'm not sure that was entirely fair. But yeah, there's definitely been criticism that they weren't picking some of the players they should have been, particularly the drag flick specialist. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the goalkeeper, if she's going to continue, because, well, she's not old, she's not young either. And another four-year cycle is a long time. Particularly, I think she's 33 off the top of my head. So, you know, it's doable, particularly if they do keep the money in the program to look after the older players. But perhaps this is an opportunity to refresh and to rebuild. And that's what possibly the US did, was they had a very, very, very young team. I think the oldest player is 28. So maybe they weren't saddled with the pressure because there wasn't any. No one expected them to do well, whereas everybody expected India pretty much to qualify.
Yeah. So the US have a history of always having a young team because they're so heavily guided by the university college stuff over there. And there's not a great deal of hockey afterwards. So it's only like the really exceptional players who go across and play in Europe predominantly who sort of stick around in the program. So there is always that churn through of younger players. And I think that's always hindered them. But I think in this one, it did kind of, I think as you put there, kind of let them play more freely because their young players, they definitely played without fear, which is a common trait of young teams.
I've got a question for you. So as we know, the greatest hockey player to have ever lived is Aaron Mattson, the US player who's now retired very young and is now a full-time coach. Being facetious, anyone who goes on Facebook in particular will know that she's held up by a lot of Americans as the greatest hockey player ever, which I think is a bit of an unfair pressure to put on her. There has been a statement or something like that where she's kind of hinted that basically if there was the opportunity to represent the USA, she would go for it. Would you like to see her at the Olympics?
I definitely think that she was a very good player and potentially could still hold her place in the side quite easily. It would all be dependent on sort of what level she's still able to play at. Obviously, she'll still be a good player, but will she, with the time off for coaching, will her skills have dulled to make her not worthy of her place? If she, you know, if she plays and she was seen to be holding her own, then absolutely keep her involved. It might give her a bit more off-field experience being a coach and give her a more tactical edge to her game that could also elevate it. It's an interesting one. I look forward to seeing how that plays out, to be fair.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I was obviously being a bit silly about it, but my personal opinion was she's very young. I think she should probably go and play elsewhere before she's older, and then get into coaching proper, because obviously she's done well. She won a title already as a coach. But I just think that's very young to get straight into coaching and to completely forsake a playing career. And if she's as good as everyone says she is, then maybe if she had a bit of time playing in the Netherlands or Germany or Belgium, what would that do to her game? And then also likewise, if she's got the stimulus of different coaching perspectives, because the American approach to coaching is pretty different. And there's definitely bits which are great about it, like they're incredibly aggressive pressing and their fitness and that's genuinely some of the best on that side of things. But yeah, time, you know, over in the Dutch league or the Germans or the Belgian could really teach her some different approaches, and then maybe she could go on to be not just an extremely good player but also a world leading coach. But should we look at the other teams who've emerged from a qualifier? So another one that leaps out is Belgium. Were you surprised to see them get through?
No. I was always pretty sure they were going to go through.
Yeah, there was. I think when you look at the team, it's a nice mix of experience and youth, and you've got some players who are probably in their last cycle, and it clearly meant a lot to them, as well as some who it's their first real chance of getting through. And again, meant a lot to them, so it was really nice to see. I think Germany, for me, was a bit of a surprise at how much they struggled. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, they never really seemed to get going in the games where I was able to catch it. Sort of like they just couldn't quite gel together. Passes were not going where players wanted them. If they wanted them going into space, they were straight to them. If they wanted them straight to them, they were into space. And just those little link-ups weren't there, which you don't usually expect from the German side.
Yeah. I remember the last one in that group, or that pool, sorry, to qualify through the qualifiers was Japan. Obviously, they upset India in the bronze medal match to qualify. What were your thoughts on them?
I mean, to be fair to Japan, they played pretty much how I expected them to play and just kept going. Again, similar to the USA, they at times played without fear of what the result was. They were going to play how they were going to play and get the result they got. I think that was evident in the India game, where they just kept at them.
So we kind of covered USA already from Pool B. So would you like to start with GB or Spain?
Start with Spain.
Yeah. I was impressed that they coped with the pressure, because Spanish women, they have a reputation for not always coping with the pressure. And it's a home tournament, which some would say is an advantage, some would say is actually a disadvantage, because there's even more pressure potentially with a lot of focus. And whilst there might not have been mammoth crowds in the week, certainly at the weekend, there were big crowds. But I think the way they qualified, particularly with that audacious lob on the penalty shootout, it's just a shootout, was quite some way to end it. I did think they were a bit lucky that maybe Ireland didn't refer some of the shootout calls that they could have done, and had that happened, maybe it would have gone elsewhere. But in the end, they qualified. I wonder if Gigi Oliva has retired, or if she's not been picked or was injured, because she's obviously on commentary. And again, she's a similar age, I think, to myself, maybe slightly younger. But you'd think maybe she could get this Olympics in. The next one might be too much, but for a player like her, I would love to see her at Paris if she can make it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about her in previous recordings. She is a quality player, and I do think she still has an effect when she's included in the team, of just a bit of added composure.
Mm.
But as you say, the Spanish cope with the pressure of being the host side really well, especially in the group stages. I thought they were fantastic. especially against Great Britain, which was kind of the big who's going to top the table game. They absorbed pressure well and took their chance.
Yeah.
When it came sort of against the run of play, they had had other chances in the game, but at the time of scoring, they were definitely under quite a lot of pressure at that point.
Yeah, one thing that I found a little bit frustrating about the Spanish isn't to do with their game or their play. It was to do with the coverage of the fact they'd qualified. There was a nice big graphic produced. It had pictures of the whole team, which was nice. And then the biggest, most focused upon person was the coach. And I do think, obviously, the coach has a big input on it. But I'm not a big fan of saying that their qualification was entirely down to the coach. Obviously, had a heavy impact. And you know, Adrian Locke did some great work there. I'm sure the new coach will. But I did think it was possibly taking away a bit from the players' achievements to put that focus on the coach. So I felt the need to say that. Should we move on to GB?
Yeah.
Should we possibly mention the fact, as British people, we may be slightly biased with our comments that might follow?
Yeah, but much like being the host side, that has positives and negatives to it. We're going to be overly critical of what we feel they fell apart on and probably overpraise what they did well.
Yeah.
So let's start with a negative in that they had just an awful return rate on penalty corners. I think we mentioned this in our group chat. If they were scoring 1 in 4, they'd have probably been the leading scorers for the tournament with how many they won.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think in the first game, they were 1 from 14.
Yeah, something like 1 from 17, I think.
And probably 90% of those were taken by Giselle Ansley. I think the first time they changed it up and went to Tobin at the top is the one that they scored.
Yep.
But I think as against the Spanish especially, we were very good at winning penalty corners, but we didn't really try anything. Now, that might be that we're holding back on routines, which is something I've seen floated online, of both the men's and the women's GB sides didn't really use a lot of routines or a lot of variety. It was all pretty direct.
Yeah.
So maybe they're holding something back with the Olympics being so close, which is not a bad thing if it gets the Olympics and they've got some stellar routine that they don't want people to work out how to counter. But at a certain point, you've got to try something different if your return rate is that bad.
Yeah, and there was the risk that they might not qualify, in which case having those hidden routines doesn't do you much good when you're watching on TV instead of in a stadium playing. Yeah, I think it's a fair point. You know, but Grace wasn't picked. She's obviously a capable defender and a real gun, having been hit by one of her flicks before. A very good drag flicker. But the decision was taken to pick someone else ahead of her. And maybe that would have helped to have that extra option on the pitch. I think Sabi Hesh had another really good tournament. I thought, whilst I was really pleased that Barbara Nalen won player of the tournament, I was kind of shocked that Tess Howard didn't. I think her, particularly what she set the tone in so many games with her pressing of players and then just scoring. She's almost like Thanos in terms of she's just inevitable. And then, yeah, good to see Toman back and looked like she was back on it properly. Laura Roper, I thought, again, really good tournament. Heard some criticisms of Lily Owlsley that she carries the ball too much into contact, which maybe would be fair, but I think also you've got to bear in mind that we, like you said, we won an enormous number of corners, and that, a lot of that's down to Sophie Hamilton, Hannah French, and Lily Owlsley, and the fouls they draw. So I can see people's point, but I can also see, actually, they're winning a lot of corners, so it is working, it's just we're not converting them. So I guess maybe we can address the elephant in the room when it comes to the GB situation, which was the goal, that second goal against Belgium, and then some of the referral stuff that happened after. So for anyone who has been living under a rock, the Belgian second goal struck Alex Kenias on the shoulder on the way in. Somehow it wasn't spotted. GB went to refer. They were then told either that they took too long or it had gone up on the big screen. However, the Japanese Federation helpfully released a video showing that they actually did referral within 7 seconds, which is a pretty sensible time frame when previous tournaments people have said vocally to teams it's 12 seconds. So GB felt very hard done by on that one. Then we had in the bronze medal match to qualify a referral where the ball clearly hit above the knee, which under most guidance would be seen as dangerous. However, a penalty corner was awarded. And then what looked like a stick obstruction was given as a stick tackle, and another penalty corner awarded. and after the final whistle, bizarrely, so Ireland were already out, but still proceeded anyway, which just seemed incredibly odd. Any thoughts or reflections on all of this? And also the fact, of course, that for, I think it was a minute and 47 seconds, I've watched it back, a minute and 47 seconds, that GB women had 12 players on. You can see how it happened. They had an enormous number of subs coming on and off at once, and it's just a bit of chaos. And it probably did have a bit of an impact on the game, but it's down for players probably could have noticed the fact they were under more pressure than normal. People have been laying into the umpires and officials on that one, and I'm not sure that's entirely fair. There's a lot going on. Mistakes will happen, and obviously I got away with it. What are your thoughts? There's a lot to cover there, sorry.
No, it's all right. So going back to start, the Belgium referral, like you say, 7 seconds seems a very reasonable amount of time. And I did notice in later games, the replays on the big screen seem to be much more delayed than they had been in the earlier stages. So early on in the tournament, they were going up on the big screen very quickly. And later on, it was like a 10-15 second delay, at least, before anything was going up. There was one point where I think it was about a minute and a half later, it went up on the big screen in the stadium. And the commentary actually talked about how it's a good job it had been so delayed. It allowed them to get the referral in because it did take them a long time. Obviously, if it goes up on the big screen, they can't then refer. But if they've requested it within 7 seconds, I can't see why it wouldn't be processed or why the umpire wouldn't go to the video umpire to have a look and see how long it's been.
Yeah.
Because that's always been how they've handled it when this sort of thing has come up. Obviously, we had the Euros, this whole has it been requested quickly enough thing, and there was a whole discussion around it then. So I would assume that going forward, there is some sort of written rule of it must be within this time frame, rather than them just throwing around different amounts of time depending on who they're speaking to. Then the referrals in the bronze medal game, like you say, with it being at the time 2-0 and the final whistle having gone, it seems an odd time to drag it out. But I suppose if the video umpire has seen it as a stick tackle rather than a stick obstruction, they've got to give the decision they see. But I thought, especially that one was very clear. I thought the one where it hit her on the knee, there was a degree of debate that could be had about her low body position and whether or not her knee was knee height, as strange as that question sounds.
Yeah.
With her being in a low block position, was her knee closer to the ground than it would be if, you know, she was standing? But then you get into the whole debate of the taller players have different danger zones, and there's a whole discussion around that as well. And then the 12 player thing, it is difficult, especially when there are times, you know, five players rolling off from each team. And I don't know exactly how many rolled on and off from each team when the extra players snuck on, but it is very hard to keep track of. Like I say, when you've got 10 players subbing on and 10 players subbing off at once for the technical delegate to keep track of everyone.
Yeah, you can see when it happens that there is, I think it's Sophie Hamilton's face. She doesn't look like she's sure if she should be going on or not. I might be wrong. It might not have been her, but I'm pretty sure it was her. Looked like she was confused as if she's going on or not, so she runs on. And maybe, I don't know which player it was who ended up being the 12th, but yeah, it's just one of those things. And like, you're right, there might be a really good from I'm not saying the umpire was wrong to give a stick tackle and wrong to say it was a foot. From my point of view, what I saw, it looked like it was dangerous and it looked like it was stick obstruction, but I'm not umpiring at Olympic qualifier level, so that's the easy answer back to say shut up, Simon. And yeah, for the match officials, there's been some pretty vitriolic abuse about missing it. And David Elworthy is David Elcock, I can't remember which one now. Oh, I'm terrible for that. David has kindly put up that, you know, it's one of those things that it's an extremely high pressure. I've had to be a match official just at National League before, and it is just a ridiculously challenging job. Yeah, David Elcock, there we go. Yeah, you know, it's a really difficult job. And I just feel like, yes, you know, it's a terrible mistake. And the person who will be most upset, well, I'm sure the Irish, of course, will feel that it's had an impact, but the person who is responsible will also definitely be feeling it. Shall we do predictions on how we think these will end up going and then move on to the men in terms of how Paris will fall out? Who are your top three overall rather than going for each group?
Top three overall, I would say, I think it's going to be Netherlands, Belgium, and then probably Argentina.
I'm inclined to agree. I think
not in necessarily that order, and not in alphabetical order either.
I would say in that order. I think if it's done, if you did it on who are the best teams in the world right now, the Netherlands are best, I think Belgium are second best, and I think Argentina's third best right now. If GB starts scoring corners, I think they could really threaten it. France, I think it's a big, I'm really excited for France. They've got some good players, genuinely, like their captain by Emma Ponchu, who's a quality hockey player. And they've got some good players. Their goalkeeper's not bad, but then, you know, this is their first time ever at the Olympics, as I know of. It's going to be a challenge. Spain potentially could be a surprise package, and obviously the USA, who knows, after their shot qualification, but it should be interesting. But just for time, we're trying to keep this one brief, should we move on to the men's?
Yeah.
So I'll try and do the same format, having not written down what I did at the start of this. So the men's pool A is the Netherlands, Germany, Great Britain, Spain, France, and South Africa, with Germany, Great Britain, and Spain as those who've qualified through the recent Olympic qualifiers. And then pool B is Belgium, India, Australia, Argentina, New Zealand, and Ireland. That saw Belgium, New Zealand, and Ireland qualify for that. I think maybe we should start off with an apology, because we basically shat all over New Zealand, the two of us, but they have managed to pull it out of the bag and qualify. So well done to them. Shut up, yeah. Taff.
Seconded.
Any thoughts on New Zealand?
Yeah, so there was a really interesting point raised. I think it was in the GB game that there was only, I think, two players from the Pro League squad had kept their place in the New Zealand team. I knew there was obviously players missing for most of their Pro League games because the European contracted players weren't released by their clubs to go and play. But I didn't realise it was that many. I thought it was like a handful. And yes, the handful I'm talking about are, you know, some of the big names who definitely would have had an effect on the game. But from their entire squad to only have two people retain their place. And I think one of them is the goalkeeper, Hayward.
Mm.
Just shows how varied that squad is to what has been rolling out for the Pro League games, where they've been getting turned over. And I think if we'd have kind of taken that into account and realised that, we'd have maybe said they had a much better chance than we made out. I would have thought that would have been a bit bigger news of just how big a difference in the squad there was. But again, like you say, the way they played was fantastic. And despite having Kane Russell, who is, I think, one of the top five drag flickers at the minute, his conversion rate was not good. I think they only won about 10 penalty corners throughout the entire tournament, and he only converted the one goal against GB. But to battle through all the games and come back in the way they did in some of them as well was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I think they were a pleasant surprise. Is the most diplomatic way of saying we were wrong. So another team in that pool who qualified through the qualifiers was Ireland. Good to see them back. They had a little bit of a break from the Olympics, but good to see them back.
Yeah, always enjoyable seeing Ireland play. They play with a great passion, no matter who the opposition is, which I think always makes their games interesting to watch.
Mm. I think for me, it was, in a way, it was a shame Pakistan missed out. I think they've clearly really improved quite a bit. There's been some interesting pointed comments from their captain about the support they get, but you can tell how much they've improved. The fact that they were that close to qualification shows how much Pakistan has improved after years and years and years of struggling. So a bit disappointed they didn't manage to get through, to be honest with you, but it's another one of those ones where it's really tough, because I'd love to see the Irish fair as well. And I think particularly the likes of Shane O'Donoghue and Dave Hart, having them back one more time, probably for both of them based on their age, is wonderful. Both cracking players. And there's a number of players, you know, in that team who are genuinely very entertaining players. They're good. They deserve to be there on merit. So yeah, very pleased for them, but also sad, of course, for the women missing out. I think, again, maybe if they'd been at the other tournament, we might be talking about them going ahead of one of the other teams. There's an interesting allocation as to how those things happened. So then the other team in Pool B that's qualified through the qualifiers is Belgium. What were your thoughts? I've heard some... I didn't get to see much of their hockey, unfortunately, just due to meetings and other stuff. But by the sounds of things, they were very impressive.
Yeah, a pretty dominant display in most of their games, with the exception of maybe the bronze medal match, where they only ran out 4-0 winners, which probably sums up how well they've been playing in some of the other games.
And Tom Bone got player of the tournament, didn't he? And I think top goal scorer. And you and I were fairly critical of not selecting him for the Euros. So it's good to see that our advice was taken on board.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it around the Euros. It seemed like a ridiculous decision to leave out one of the top goal scorers in the game at the minute.
Yeah. He hit a milestone and goal scored at international level. And it was a mental number. Should have written it down. I think it was well over 100 international goals.
I mean, he's been playing international since he was about 12 years old, I think. So,
yes, he does come from a family with some pretty strong pedigree. He's an exceptional talent. And I can't find what the milestone was that he hit, unfortunately. He's just a phenomenal player. And also nice to see John de Men at another Olympic Games. The man is tireless. So we move on to Pool A. So people who qualified through the qualifiers here are Germany, GB and Spain. Should we start with Spain?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on them with Max Caldas in charge? How do they go for you?
Yeah, I mean, they went pretty much how I was expecting them to go. Perhaps a little bit more consistent through their games. Obviously, we've talked in the past about how they're very explosive and then burn out and sort of recharge and go again. And it's just how they hold up in that downtime in the middle. But they seem to be a lot more consistent from what I've seen of them throughout the tournament, of not kind of burning out straight away and then almost just trying to defend the 23 because they've got no energy to stretch the pitch until the last quarter where they go again. And much, much more, as I say, consistent throughout the game of picking and choosing their moments to really go at them and getting some good results out of it. So perhaps that is just Caldas coming in with a kind of wise head and coaching them on that decision-making of when to go 100% and when to hold it back.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the big thing that you said there, I think, is the consistency thing. That's a huge change in the last few years, and that's happened under Caldas. I think slagged off the women for focusing on the man coach. But no, and again, you know, it's across the whole team. They've all become more consistent and they've become less fiery. Like there are games in the past where players have got binned off, they've lost their heads, they've blamed the umpires or whatever. And you see that happen less and less and less. And they're just steady with ridiculous skill, of course. But they're just steady and do what they need to do, which is how you win games. So next one for us to probably talk about would be Germany, who barely finished with 13 players at the end of the tournament due to injuries. But they ended up winning it still because, like, Tess Howard is inevitable. So is German victory, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, can we just take a moment to look at the tactical play from Germany in that gold medal match, knowing that they had half a bench?
Yeah.
Was it even half a bench with the injuries by the end of it?
Three missing, so two subs.
Yeah. So like not being able to run their usual rotation and the way that they just killed the tempo of the game to stop it being such an endurance battle, which is what GB obviously wanted going into it with those extra men.
Yeah.
And just slowing the game down, holding a half-court press at times, switching up to a full press occasionally just to keep GB on their toes. But being happy to just sit back and let them have possession, knowing that when they get it back, they're just going to kill the time. They're going to play good passes, but they're going to force them into congested areas and they're going to pick the pocket. I mean, I lost count of how many times they forced GB into a tight space and then picked the ball from the air as GB tried to 3D skill into a gap and just completely killed all of the pressure by just playing a simple out ball to someone on the halfway who held the ball up for 10-15 seconds and draw a foul.
It can be so simple, can't it?
Well, that's it. Like, just the denial of allowing GB to play the game they wanted to play on a tactical level was fantastic. Like, if that had gone to a shootout and they'd lost, it would have still been amazing how they'd done it. Because you think of that going into a normal hockey game, you'd be like, right, we've got three extra people on the bench. run around, burn yourself out, come off, catch your breath, come back on. In the last 20 minutes, they're going to have nothing left.
Yeah.
And at the highest level, to be like, right, no, we're going to sit back, we're going to give them possession of the ball, and we're going to make something happen.
Especially under the heat in Oman.
Yeah, even more so.
Yeah.
That's going to have an effect on the endurance of the game.
Definitely. Yeah, I think you've touched pretty much everything that needs to be said when it comes to the Germans there. They were, it's kind of worrying, isn't it, that good when they're that short. That moves us on to GB. So the men qualified, won their semi-final. I kind of hoped that, you know, there's been this thing in the past about they've never won their final. And I would hope they see that as the final, because that's the game that mattered, was winning that semi. So hopefully psychologically they can take that as they've actually managed to do it now as a group. Like the women didn't convert their PCs. I mean, the number they had, I think they were saying on the commentary, it was something like they'd had like 47 or something penalty corners.
I think it was 37 and they converted 8.
Yeah. I did the maths. It was something like a 1 in 7 or 8 average. Yeah. And again, hopefully they may be saving it. And they do have better variety. I am a big fan of for just twat it as hard as you can down the middle, which Ward and Banderak seem to have reveled in a bit recently. And Jack Waller's nice little deflection on the post after an injection was a good one as well. But yeah, that's definitely a concern. But
so there was something that was brought up in that final game against Germany, that string of 3 or 4 penalty corners that they had after the final whistle.
Yeah.
The commentator mentioned something about Sam Ward has picked up an injury, which means he can't go full force with his flicks, which makes it a really odd choice that they kept going to him.
Yes.
On those final four. I don't think Banderak was on, but they definitely had other options that they could go with.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just that they were going with Ward because he wasn't going to have the mobility maybe to get in for the rebound, which is what they were wanting to do because they were obviously packing the D and trying to pick something up.
Yeah.
But I just think a little bit of variation there could have done something.
Yeah, there's a player who used to play for us at Cambridge called Keir Dixon, who played for Wales as well, and he used to refer to his drag flicks as power crumpets. And that's what I would kind of say some of Phil Roper's ones are. And without seeing Keir's flicks, he won't know if that's a compliment or an insult. I'm sure he's an avid listener. But I would have had Roper flicking in that situation. Like, he's a good enough flicker for that level that if it catches him by surprise, he might get a goal. If they know he's coming, that might be another matter. I don't think he professed to be a top three drag flicker in the world, but he's certainly a good one.
He also uses a different technique to probably 90% of the drag flickers, in that he has a tendency to pull the ball into his feet first to get it to roll up the stick, which makes it a lot more difficult for goalkeepers to read because there's not that initial movement towards a direction. It's always in, and then from there he can go either way. But because it's so upright, because it's close to him, it's very difficult to pick the angle until almost the point of release.
Yeah, I remember Asher Jackson doing that, where as a, like when you're doing the stats at the event and you're sat behind the goal or watching the camera, and you can see that it's the stick movement at the last millisecond to go left or right. Basically, he's picking at the last opportunity. Is he going top left or top right? Yeah, that technique definitely could be useful. But yeah, I think it'd be interesting. If they can start scoring their corners, they could be very good. So should we pick out? There's no real controversies to cover on the men's tournaments, were there? Not like we had with the GB women.
Not springing to mind. I'm sure TAF will be inundated with messages.
Yes.
About what we've missed.
So who are we picking as our top three from the... actually, one other thing just to say is, from a production point of view, I did find the Omani presentation... A lot of love for Oman. I've had my parents live there. But I found the fact that you couldn't hear the umpire referrals and some of the camera angles picked were incredible. Very frustrating. And then going at the end.
So there's been production issues throughout, but a lot of them do seem to have been from Oman. The lack of the umpire comms was a real problem because you had no idea what the question was.
Yep.
You had no idea what the decision was, and we were sort of almost guessing. I don't know if the commentators could hear it or not, but it definitely did seem a lot of the time like they were trying to interpret based on body language on the pitch. I think there was one where Simon Mason said, I think that must be no advice possible, because why else would you speak to both teams like that?
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, right, so you can't hear the comms for certain at this point. But there was the problem with the clock. There was the scoreboard disappeared in one of, I think it was the GB New Zealand game.
Yep.
Obviously, watching through the BBC, they threw up a little graphic in the corner of, I think it was Q3 in the score. But there was no clock, so you had no idea how long was left. You didn't have the referral or anything like that. And I think they literally threw that up because there was nothing on screen to indicate it. And it went off about halfway through quarter two. But yeah, so some of the choice of cameras was just obtuse, in that they would switch to a camera where you can't see what was going on.
Yeah.
Or they would play a replay as a penalty corner was being taken. So you're watching a replay of the first runner charging down and getting hit in the knee or the shin, and the commentators are talking about the next penalty corner.
Yeah.
And that happened a couple of times. And I was just like, let's just cut off the replay. Yeah. As soon as the whistle goes.
This goes back to the problems that we highlighted before in the last episode, which was there's too much hockey on at once. And you can't get people who know what they're doing in the right places as a consequence. But also,
yeah, I mean,
this is obviously a warm-up for the main event, which is actually the Hockey Fives World Cup, which is the only one we really care about. So it's good to get the gremlins out of the way now.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, we talked about this previously. The coverage needs to improve if we want it to be broadcastable. We need to send people who know what they're doing to each tournament. And at the minute, it's very much reliant on who they've got on the ground and how good they are with the production, rather than the FIH sending their own production team, or at least a production manager to lead everything on site and drag it up to what I would describe as an acceptable broadcast standard.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. The commentary is pretty good generally. There's one bloke who talks gibberish constantly, but the rest of them are very good. And then obviously the standard of play is very high. It was just the production really let it down, particularly from Oman. I think there's some issues obviously in Valencia as well that I saw, maybe a few in Ranchi, but it was Oman where it was consistently there's something every game. We thought, for God's sake. Yeah. Anyway, should we move on to the brighter thing? Who do we think is going to pick up the three important shiny medals for the men?
So based on what we've seen, I would probably go Netherlands, probably Belgium, and Great Britain.
In that order?
In that order.
Not Germany?
Not Germany. As good as they were, I think I'm putting a lot of faith in GB pulling something out with penalty corners at the Olympics. Because even if you look at the Germany game, if they'd have converted 1 in 5 of penalty corners won, they'd have won that game. So it's not a problem with winning them. They just have to convert. And I think with the lack of routines, I'm going to wildly speculate that they've got something up their sleeve that they're saving for an important game.
And despite them having the best 16 players in the world and the best coach in the world, you're not picking India?
No.
No.
I do think India are a very good side.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think it's very much dependent on where they fall out of their group.
Yeah.
Looking at that pool, I would say they'd be looking third or fourth place.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Which I would say would then pit them up against the Netherlands or Germany, probably from pool A.
Yeah, I'm obviously being facetious. It's not actually fair on the Indian team that they keep on being embarrassed by the conduct of the FIH awards. They are a good team. They have some amazing players. It's just a frustration globally that the Indian team gets such ridiculously preferential treatment, a hang up from previous president, probably. For me, I'm tempted to go bold, and I think Great Britain could win gold. I think if they can sort the corners out, you know, they were very, very unlucky against the Netherlands in the Euro final. It was, I mean, not just bad luck. It was extremely unfortunate what happened. And they should have had a reward on a penalty stroke and possibly even a card for goalkeeper. And instead, it was a free at defence. But if they can start scoring those corners, which you have to believe that is what is going to be the focus for the next 6 months, that could be, they won't be using them in Pro League. I'm sure we're about to see the world's most boring corner routines in Pro League. But
I'm looking forward to, at the Pro League, penalty corners being three attackers versus the runners. They're just going to have injection, stop, flick. Not even going to bother trying to do deflections. Really, yeah, just push out, Top D, stop, roll in, do something.
Or go fully old school, like not old school, sorry, just rebel. One injector, one stopper and striker, same person. Two people, routine. Defense won't know what to do, but panic. That's it. We should be joining GB as the penalty corner coaches. So I'm picking GB for gold. I'm backing them. No pressure. Again, with all seven listeners, I'm sure it will get back to them eventually. I'd like the Netherlands probably, I think, will be picking up silver. I think that they are a very good team. I think they're beginning to overcome some of their historic wobbles. And that's probably partly, again, I know I complained earlier about the focus being on the coach, but I think your own Dalmay has maybe helped to get rid of some of the... I heard a number of players in the past saying about how they have this culture of partying a lot. And I don't think you necessarily get that so much with him. He doesn't seem sort of a guy who's got a bucket hat on and going out disco driving.
So one thing, we've talked about penalty corners. Remember that the Netherlands won the Euros and I don't think they scored a penalty corner.
True.
So that's another one where if they do start converting penalty corners, having won the Euros without them, it's very interesting how it would change the game if they did start putting them away, because obviously they've got some top flickers in their squad.
Yeah. The thing is, though, with their ones, their problem is that there's so much footage out there of their flickers. And it's not like they can pull someone up who's going to be a surprise, because there's so much footage from the Hoofklasse. Whereas if we pick a relatively new GB flicker, let's say Thomas Breckley managed to sneak into the squad, I'd be quite happy about that. He's a lovely chap, good flicker. There's not masses of footage of Tom Spreckley wanging in drag flicks in Division 1 that the opposition will have access to. So no one can be a surprise flicker from the Netherlands. Who am I going to go with for bronze? I think possibly Belgium. I think it's weird not thinking Australia and Argentina are going to be in the mix. India as well, because they can pull it out of the bag sometimes. But I mean, Belgium are getting old. That's what I'm kind of hoping is why they're not going to beat the British there. But they're still obviously a very good team. And when they're on form, they are very difficult to beat. So my preference, I'm hoping it will be GB, Netherlands, Belgium in that order.
Let's not rule out Belgium coaching staff leaving out Boone, Hendricks.
just
goalkeepers in general. They're not going to bother with them.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll take on Taff and go with his rogue idea of picking up the best players. Like he picked up a few weeks ago, he suggested it might be a good idea to pick the best goalkeeper. So we'll see if that idea catches on. Right. Anything else to add?
Just to roll back onto one of the points we touched on briefly, too much hockey.
Yeah.
I think it averaged over the past week and a half to being about 10 games a day.
Yep.
Quite often, two games on at once.
Yep. Yeah, literally, so GB men and women were on at exactly the same time.
But not even just them, like across the board, multiple games, like pushing back 10 minutes apart and stuff like that.
It's nuts.
Hockey's not got a big viewership. We rely on sort of the handful of diehards who are going to tune in and give us that audience. And asking people to give up 12 hours on some days to watch all of the games is just unreasonable.
Yeah.
Especially when we've got our own
hockey to play as well on weekends.
Yeah. So I was talking about four games a day, spread the tournaments out, have the one in Ranchi, the one in Muscat, have them run simultaneously, women's one day, men's the other, just alternate back and forth. If you want to double up on the final day, have the two third place playoffs and the two finals, give them an extra rest day so everyone's fully recharged, and then switch over and play the Valencia tournaments.
Yep.
Again, same format, men's then women's all the way through. You'll get people, I mean, the FIH is trying to sell watch.hockey. They're trying to sell tournament passes or their season pass. But I think it's good that places like the BBC and other regional broadcasters have picked up home nation games. So BBC did Great Britain. Belgium has to be broadcast, I think, whenever their national team plays, has to be on Freeview television, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Someone picked it up in Germany. It was on somewhere in Ireland. The channel is completely escaping me. But with the masses of hockey being played and the home nation being broadcast, I think it cut out a huge number of people who might have tuned in, because the games they're most interested in are obviously going to be their home nation games. and people might have picked up the tournament pass to watch other games. But when you see a wall of games being played a day, you go, well, I'm not going to watch all that. I might watch one or two games. It's not worth the pass. But you see, oh, there's four games a day. All right, well, I'll probably not watch that one. I'll watch these three, though. So it's probably worthwhile picking up a tournament pass for it. It's just killing its own viewership. And if we're trying to build hockey as a sport to get money in, we need A, good broadcast quality, and B, an audience. And at the minute, the FIH seems to be taking steps to kill both of them.
Yeah, I think you said it all there. It's been, you know, we're both very big hockey keenos. And if anyone's likely to watch all of it, it's us, and we couldn't. And it's not fair either, because, you know, these players have dedicated so much time and energy to playing, and to not get the attention they deserve is wrong. But when you've got a schedule so packed, and throughout the working days, you know, you can easily, a lot, particularly remote working and flexible working, it's foreseeable you could say, okay, I can eke out maybe an extra half hour on my lunch break or something and watch this game. You can't do that multiple times in a day across an entire week. So yeah, I definitely agree on that. And the other thing I would say maybe is, whilst the criticism is understandable regarding some of the umpire errors or the technical official errors or whatever, and, you know, it's legit, their job's to make the right decisions or whatever. The fact is, it's a super duper professional game now, and it's getting increasingly professional every day. The umpiring, the technical officiating is not getting more professional. If anything, sometimes it's going backwards in terms of the support, in quotation marks, that they get. You know, the new Nike deal heralded, and yet they don't even have matching tops, matching logos. Some of them have ill-fitting. That's not there. The fact that they have put on these bizarre fitness programs that are in no way whatsoever tailored to the individual needs. The lack of support and time in terms of experience of using video umpires, you know, they're not all based in Europe, where it is perhaps more prevalent than others. So, yeah, I just think there needs to be a degree of understanding that, yes, mistakes will happen, but if they were willing to just even siphon off 1% of the budget to try and support officiating, then maybe they would find a lot less to complain about on that front with a bit more backing on it.
So anyway, this is where I throw out an opinion that I've had for a while, but I think one of the first things that the FIH should do is try and make the umpires salaried.
Yep.
Because at the minute, it's too much dependent on who's nearby of a acceptable quality rather than who are the best umpires who we want to get to the major tournaments. Like, there should be some sort of, as I said, the only way I can describe it is salary, because at the minute, it's travel expenses, I believe, is all that.
Plus, like, get your clothes washed and a bit of food.
I would class that as a travel expense if they're away from home. But it's travel expenses. It's not based on who they think is the best umpire. There's a budget clearly in place for those travel expenses, which is why they're not necessarily looking for who is the best umpire. It's who's of an acceptable standard nearby, which is not getting at any specific umpire, but there are times where the umpires that are selected for tournaments or matches are not of the quality that you want them to be. And I think that can be tied back to location. And I think if they're salaried, then it enables the FIH to send them out and say, look, right, we're putting you on salary. We're sending you to the Dutch league because that's the highest standard of hockey at a club level. You're going to go and do their national league games, keep you sharp as we go into this major tournament. So for this 6 months you're on salary, you're going to be living there to get you prepped as we go to Paris. And I think that will see a huge improvement, especially if they start adding stuff in, like doing video umpire courses, so people get used to looking through footage and being able to make the decision quicker. Knowing the camera angles would be a huge benefit as well, so they can get used to where they need to look from to find whatever it is quicker. And I think that's a step that the FIH needs to look into if we want to raise the quality of the game. And while I'm bashing the FIH, they need to sort out highlights as well. Because,
oh my God, they're a joke.
I think from the first day of the Olympic qualifiers, it took 2 or 3 days before the highlights started coming out, by which point most of the teams had played 2 more games. So if you're trying to follow along, being able to watch the highlights the next day is one of the best ways to do it. Yeah. Having to wait 2 days, no one is going to go back and watch them. And that's only through watch.hockey. That's not even They were up on Watch.hockey the next day, and they went up on YouTube and social media a couple of days later. It does not take that long. You look at the EHL, the full highlights are out probably before the end of the next game.
Yeah, well, it's just down to that. They've got much better production set up, and it's scalable. I found it incredible to see just a bombardment on YouTube of sort of 1 minute, 1.5 minute long highlight packages for games. There's no way you can tell the story of a match in a minute to a minute and a half, especially when you consider the pre-roll of a post and the credit thing at the end.
Oh, that's something else. The post-roll stuff that they put at the end, you know, the like, subscribe, the references to other stuff, numerous videos that appears during the highlights and covers up whatever's going on in the footage. Yeah. Truly, truly fantastic to see from your national or international governing body that they can't even put a blank screen for those things to appear over at the end of the video.
It is mind-boggling how amateur the FIH is when it comes to its comms approach. That one where they stuck up the kittens talking to each other. Like, how on earth is an international governing body thinking that is okay? A GCSE student doing something on basic business studies would know a better marketing communication plan. It's a shambles. Maybe this is a topic maybe for another day, because we want to do a quick, concise one.
Yeah, that would probably take us at least however long we've been recording for, twice over.
Right. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Fraser. We had a lovely little chin wag. Hopefully, Taff will be out of the basement again soon. But till next time, I will bid you adieu.
Cheers, I.
There we go.
Oh, I thought you were going to do your knowing me, knowing you.
I thought about it.
And I was going to stare blankly at you.
I couldn't think of anything to say. Thank you.